Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
If you've ever said a silent prayer during a bad bout of turbulence on an aircraft, you'll know it's a scary part of air travel. Experts say flights are getting bumpier as climate change affects weather patterns. One culprit, clear air turbulence occurring at high altitude in seemingly calm skies, something that's notoriously difficult to predict. Kevin Byrne is a retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Security and Safety Auditor. He joins us on the line now. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Philip.
From your point of view as a pilot, can you explain to us, please, what clean air turbulence is? What happens? What kind of warning do you get? How do you cope with it?
Well, let's go back one step, if I might. On the front of every airliner, there's a thing called weather radar, and that sort of searches out clouds, stuff we can see, and the storms and that kind of thing, heavy rain, turbulence, that kind of thing. So the pilots will ask to divert from their current course if they're not going to go through this stuff. You know, the big, heavy storm clouds, cumulonimbus, that kind of thing. We're not talking about that because we know where that is, and we get very good predictions from the Met Service before takeoff, and that's still the case. We also ask for clear air turbulence notifications and predictions if possible, but quite difficult to predict because, as the name suggests, it's in clear air turbulence. I was coming back on a flight from Kazakhstan before Christmas and we hit a patch in a Boeing 737 at 36,000 feet over the desert in Kazakhstan and my wine spilled. So I was a bit upset by that.
Oh, the humanity.
It was a minor case of it. Yes, the aircraft pitched, rolled and yawed all at the same time without any kind of prediction. The pilots didn't know it was there. So they told us, strap in straight away, stop serving the food and the booze and that kind of thing, and we'll batten down the hatches for 7 or 8 minutes, which we did. That's a minor, moderate case in which the aircraft, it sort of is pushed down by air, fluid air is what I'll call it, currents that go updrafts and downdrafts, and they affect, in some cases, a downdraft will do maybe 10 metres. It will force the aircraft down in a second, 10 metres. In severe turbulence, and this is the one that causes injuries to people on board, without warning, the aircraft might go down 50 metres in less than a second, in which case you're pitching the aircraft down. It literally flies down or falls down out of the sky. It's still safe now, by the way. I have to specify that from the airframe kind of view, these aircraft are designed.
Well, okay, we'll come on to the aircraft design in a second, but let's just stick with the physical phenomenon for a second, because we know that the Arctic is getting warmer, four times faster than the rest of the globe, and we know that that is contributing to the wind shear in the jet stream. So this is a problem that is only getting worse from a pilot's point of view.
In the last 45 years, they've actually noted, because they kept records, it's increased by 55%, records of clear air turbulence. But it's expected to happen three times worse by the 2050s. That's just 25 years from now. So it will seriously affect all of the long-haul flights and indeed many of the shorter-haul flights.
So the number of incidents is increasing, but also the severity of those incidents when you hit these pockets of clear air turbulence.
Yes, and they're putting in ameliorations if they can, but it's not easy. One of them is a prediction. Take out the radar and put in a thing called LIDAR. That's light detection and ranging. In other words, you put a beam out in front of you, and maybe you could predict up to 10 kilometers. So you can say, look, the disturbance of the air is such that this will fly around it, and we'll predict, and we'll tell the passengers on board, strap in, we're going to have a touch of it now. But the problem with that is it's heavy and it uses energy. It's much more less cost effective than radars that we have at the moment. So it's one of the suggestions.
Okay. What actually happens to the plane, Kevin? How much can it drop by?
It can drop, as I said, in real severe, unnoticed clear air turbulence, the aircraft can drop 100 metres. That's 300 feet. So it's cruising at a particular level, cruising along at, Mach 0.8, whatever, 600 miles an hour, and suddenly the aircraft is down. It's literally pushed into a current of air. Either it's going down or up, or left or right. It depends. Okay. Air is a fluid, dynamic situation, and they can't tell you how long it'll last, what's happening, and there's no prediction. That is the serious danger we have at the moment.
And are instances of this kind worse or more pronounced within the jet stream, or can this happen anywhere?
It can happen anywhere, but it's pronounced more around the tropics, such as places like Malaysia, parts of Africa, that even over the Pacific, and indeed more and more over the Atlantic now. So there are disturbances there that weren't there before. IATA, the International Air Transport Association, is doing studies on this, and it's been taking records from 1.8 million flights to see if they can predict in different parts of the world at different seasons what can happen. And there are lots of MET involved, meteorological organizations, yeah, trying to get involved and predict this, so the aircraft won't fly through them, they'll fly around them if at all
and
possible.
What, well, I was going to say, what is the response now? Can we continue to use jet streams to make fuel savings and speed up
journey times
in the same way that we have been for a very long time, or do we need to start avoiding certain patches of sky?
We're going to have to start avoiding, I think. As I said, the danger is that, you know, you do damage to the people on board, not so much the aircraft. But if it happens at this level, then your routine flights are going to have to be extended. It's going to cost more fuel, and it's going to cost more in terms of emissions and that kind of thing. But you have to do it, because if we don't take any measures now, we're going to have, you know, serious injuries, and we're going to, in some cases, have to remove aircraft off particular routes, and that would be unconscionable at the moment.
Structurally, what happens to these planes when they suddenly drop 100 metres in the sky? Are they built to withstand this kind of thing?
Not just as a
once-off, but repeatedly.
Yes, indeed. You might have remembered, there was one which was a 777, and there were people who were seriously injured by a very severe case of clear air turbulence. And when they got the aircraft on the ground, the people went off to hospital. One man died, unfortunately. They diverted the aircraft, but they were amazed to find no damage at all. They did a very, very thorough study of the engines, of the airframe, of all of the bolts and nuts and that kind of thing. Even the avionics weren't affected by it. So aircraft are designed to take a certain amount of G-forces. When the aircraft drops like that, the wings tend to bend. In the case of, for example, the 787 Dreamliner, which was in the news recently, I've seen the winglets, the wing tips of those bend through 2 meters. They're designed to bend and take as much of the force as they can. So there's not going to be permanent damage except in exceptional circumstances. And the problem is the people inside it are not strapped down, and they are, you know, subject to damage. And that has happened, unfortunately, leading to one death.
So the structure of the plane is built to withstand this. The reason that it sounds and it feels so much more dramatic and like there might be something structurally going wrong with the plane when you're inside is because of all of our luggage and our bits and bobs jumping around in the overhead cabins.
Yeah, and indeed, the newer versions of aircraft have stronger cabins which can take higher loads, and they've got better locks on them, because we've heard of cases where people's, you know, duty-free has popped out and hit somebody two rows away and given them an injury, you know, on the head, for example. That can happen, but it's unusual now. There are cases, too, where people have been fired by the, you know, the G-forces, and they've actually broken the overhead locker with their head, and that's not a good place to be. It's a serious injury involving in that.
Yeah, indeed. Do you keep your belt on the whole time?
Ah, that's one thing now. I hear it time again. I was on 4 Ryanair flights in the last couple of weeks, and there are people who they stand around and go to the loo, and that's perfectly okay. But if you're sitting down, there's no reason in the wide world which you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't have your belt open. It should be tied, and I think it should be mandatory. But it's not at the moment. It's an option. You can sit down and leave your belt open, but you're leaving yourself open to a little bit of risk, and I don't see the point of taking that risk at all, Philip.
I've seen it on the flight. I saw somebody, if not exactly smash the overhead locker, but certainly give it a bang when they flew right up out of their seat, but everybody else around them had the belts on. I wonder if this is, as you say, becoming increasingly frequent and increasingly severe, why is it not something that is a part of the safety message before the plane ever takes off?
I suppose because they can't predict it. It's unpredictable. As I said, if the pilots have radars on and they said it's a stormy day in the winter over Europe, for example, they will predict it and they'll say, look, in the next 5 minutes, we're going to have some turbulence. Please, you know, stop serving and strap in your seats and that kind of thing. And we'll be through it in 4 or 5 minutes. It's comforting. It's probably more disturbing to tell them people were going to fly for 7 or 8 hours. We don't know where and when we're going to hit clear air turbulence, but we're sure to hit it. All that does is upset the passengers needlessly. So What they will do is put a design in the aircraft, which is now being studied in Austria and in Sweden, things called flaplets, and they will be able to sense the clear air turbulence, and they'll be able to put in counter measures, so to speak, and the wings then will be bouncing a little bit, but much less than they would if the aircraft hadn't been fitted with these things. But they've yet to be proven in commercial aviation, but they will be, I think, in the next decade or so.
The problem, as I understand it, with any changes to the design of an aeroplane is that a commercial airliner will fly for 30 years once it's pressed into service.
That is
so
true.
It's going to be a long time before you manage to get the new generation of aircraft up there.
That is true, Philip. As you said, stuff that's been delivered next year and the year after will fly for 25, 30 years to make a profit, as it were. They have to design the flaplets now and put them into the Airbuses and into the Boeings in the next 5 years and say, that's the new model. Not that hard to do, I'm told, in terms of modifications, but you probably could not retrofit them to the fleet that's out there. And we've got thousands and thousands of jets, as you know, in the sky.
And why not? Why could you not retrofit?
Well, they'd have to design it. It's possible because they have, for example, put new, what the thing called sharklets on the wingtips of our Ryanair aircraft, and they cost $60,000, but they make the money back in a couple of flights, a couple of years, so to speak. It's possible that they will invent that. If that is the case, then the problem is mitigated to a large extent because the flaplets will take away the danger of passenger damage inside the aircraft as opposed to any airframe damage on the outside. Mm-hmm.
The airline industry is also, while all of this is going on, investigating the possibility of minimizing its own emissions by flying in a way that doesn't create those vapor trails behind it, or at least not as much of it. Do the pressures being placed on it by clear air turbulence and that desire to reduce emissions complement each other or contradict each other? Can you fly in the same spaces and achieve the same desired results?
Probably, yes. Again, there's a study trying to work out in different parts of the world what altitude should we fly at to avoid making the vapor trails, which, of course, we can see on a summer's day out in Ireland. The last time we had good hot air, we had 30 degrees here in North Kildare a few weeks ago. I counted 20 different jet trails across the sky, which lasted a long time because of the high pressure. But air traffic control units are aware of this, and if you can predict from the Met Service what altitudes you should avoid to do that, they will actually give clearances up and down. It might use less fuel, it might use more fuel, but it will remove that. But the clear air turbulence really can be anywhere between 30,000 and 45,000 feet. It's quite a severe limit, if you know what I mean. So until we get more predictable as regards the appearance of clear air turbulence in different parts of the world, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference at the moment.
Okay, Kevin Byrne, thank you very much. Retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Security Safety Auditor Kevin Byrne there. We'll take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.